The importance of being resilient. The past couple of years have tested us in oh so many ways. I don't need to list them. And it's still tough. So this year, Maine Calling is launching a new series on resilience. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We will be checking in with experts who can give us some tips and tools to help us face the challenges getting thrown at us every day. We'll discuss topics such as overcoming burnout and how to feel in control when things are out of control. But today, to get started, we are going to talk about the whole concept of resilience. What does that mean anyway? And how can working to be more resilient help us in tough times? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling on Demand is made possible by listeners and by Maine General Health, a comprehensive system for all your healthcare needs. Learn more at mainegeneral.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. So many of us have heard that it helps to be resilient during these difficult times. But what does that mean? And how exactly do you incorporate resilience into your daily life? Well, today is the first program in our year-long series exploring the concept and practice of resilience. Tune in on the first Friday of each month to learn about resilience from different angles in our workplace, among friends and family, and within ourselves. Joining me today to kick off the series, Amy Wood, who's a psychologist and executive coach, and she has been instrumental in helping Maine Calling plan out our series on resilience. Also with us today, David Lee. He is the founder of Human Nature at Work and helps employers create a more resilient workforce. His presentation, Becoming Resilient, was first aired on Maine Public Radio in 2001. We invite you to join the conversation. Ask about resilience. Ask for some help. Share your comments and questions via email, talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Amazing, David, that you had that presentation in 2001, because I don't think most of us were using the term resilience back in 2001. Why don't you talk to me about what you mean when you use the word resilience? I suspect that word means different things to different people.
Absolutely. It's funny you say that, because actually in the early days, people would actually say to me like, oh, that's a really interesting term. Like, how did you come up with it? Like, I didn't make up that term. And so I think of when I think about resilience, I like to break it into four components, because each component offers clues about practices that can strengthen that component. So typically when people think of resilience, they think about the ability to bounce back from adversity. That's the typical way people think about it. That is one critical part. But also a really important part of resilience is, you know that saying, don't sweat the small stuff. It's our ability to not react to the little hassles, frustrations, difficult people that we experience during the day. But since not all of life is small stuff, as we've been experiencing the last several years, resilience is also our ability to respond effectively during, you know, difficult times, difficult situations throughout the day, et cetera. And then the fourth part of resilience, which I think really separates it from just like being tough or stoic, is our ability to, quote, go with the flow. Our ability to respond flexibly to rapid changing circumstances. So that's how I think of it.
It's interesting, David, you said don't sweat the small stuff, because, you know, we say that, it's almost a cliche, but that is sure easier said than done.
It certainly is. So speaking from personal experience, it certainly is. And here's the thing, two reasons why it's so important to develop our capacity to not sweat the small stuff. Number one, there's really fascinating research that came out about 20 years ago showing that it's what researchers call the daily hassles that have the bigger impact on our stress level and our health than major life crises like losing a job, loss of a loved one, et cetera. And so it's those little daily things that wear us down. So getting good at that. And then number two is by practicing not being reactive to that annoying person, or let's say for me, like getting stuck at a traffic jam and not like, you know, starting to see, getting good at that when it is, quote, big stuff, we've built our resilience muscles, so we're more able to handle that.
Okay, Amy, some people, I think that resilience is just soldiering on, just making it through. And I was thinking, as I thought about this program, that we're all more resilient than we were 2 years ago. Anybody sitting here today listening to this program, whether he or she wants to be or not, is more resilient than they were 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, I think that's true. Some of us are more resilient, but I think the more resilient among us are those who have been handling all the stress better than those people who have, as you just put it, been soldiering through it. I think that it's important to point out what resilience is not. You know, in our culture, we tend to view resilience as just toughing it out, you know, like pulling all-nighters and not sleeping and, you know, taking the edge off by having a few drinks after work. And we tend to view that as a status symbol sometimes, you know, like I'm working 80 hours a week and I don't even have time to have dinner with my family and I don't even have time to exercise. And that's not resilience. That's the quickest route possible to burnout. And, you know, what I have been seeing, especially in the past year, is a lot of the really high level professionals that I work with, you know, a lot of attorneys, physicians, for example, who really aspire toward that definition. I'm just going to soldier on and grin and bear it. And they are really falling apart and having to take leave from work because they just have hit a wall. So I think it's really important to pay attention to that true definition that David just described, where resilience is not about toughing it out. It's essentially about taking care of yourself first so that you can learn from stress and thrive and be adaptable in the face of it and all not right. fall apart.
Amy and David, I'm going to go to a call earlier than usual because I think it's a really important call. I'm going to Maureen in Cape Elizabeth. Maureen, go ahead.
Hi, this is perfect timing for this to happen on a Friday. I'm an ER nurse at a local Portland Level 1 trauma center, and the word resilient has been used in my profession for years, but I have to tell you, like, the last 2 years have been unbearable, and we don't know if I don't even know how to, like, incorporate resilience into my practice anymore. Kind of like soldiering through is kind of like what you just mentioned earlier, to the point where we're so burned out that, like, we're needing to take leave or we want to take leave. What do we do? I don't know how to incorporate resilience into my daily practice as a nurse anymore in the ER. We have no help. I mean, I don't know what to do. A lot of us don't know what to do. We just are like, is this the new norm? Because if this is the new norm, then we're in trouble.
Amy, I'll start with you. No.
Yeah, I think what you're talking about is more of a system problem. You know, you can have all sorts of good intentions. And I like what you said about making it a daily practice, because resilience is a daily practice. It's a daily intention, and you have to work at it your whole life. But when you're in a situation where you're asked to do so much at work and there's just too much for the average person to get done in a day, how are you supposed to do that? And I think one really good rule of thumb for resilience is you never want to do more in one day than you can recover from by the next day. And because of what's going on right now due to the pandemic, especially for people on the front line, that's not possible anymore. People don't have that recovery time. And so they're coming back to work the next day feeling completely exhausted instead of refreshed as it should be.
David, why don't you add on to what advice do you have for Maureen?
Yeah, so I want to piggyback on what Amy was saying about recovery. One of the metaphors, and this is something that I'm using right now with a healthcare system I'm working with, it's like you, Maureen, and your colleagues have been competing in a never-ending Ironman event for the last 2 years. And what that speaks to, anytime you add more challenge, like in the fitness world, you need to do more recovery. And so adding, and the reason why I'm hesitating is I don't want it to sound like, oh, here's something more to add to your plate, like an hour of meditation every day, that sort of thing. But looking for little moments where you can do micro recoveries throughout the day to give your nervous system a break. I also highly encourage you to Google Jane McGonigal and power-ups. Of 30 plus years of working in the resilience world, the concept of power-ups, which comes from video games, so, you know, retro time, Pac-Man, the pill makes the Pac-Man stronger. Any little thing that boosts your energy level. So let's say having a short, fun conversation with a friend, just looking outside and seeing a bird at the bird feeder, taking 2 minutes to watch a funny video. Those things not only boost your energy level and emotional state, but there's fascinating research how it strengthens your nervous system, your vagus nerve specifically, that helps you be more resilient and more stress hardy. So power-ups and mini recovery breaks are two simple things that, you know, are actionable. And there's a lot more, but to your question, yeah.
Maureen, while you're on the phone, are there any other specific questions you'd like to ask David or Amy?
No, I think actually what he was just talking about, power-ups kind of makes sense when we're, you know, doing the long shifts, that maybe we could try to find a way to do that when we're in the trenches. I tried at one point I did a research study on restrooms, resilient rooms, like little closets that just have, we can go in for a minute and take a deep breath and things like that. But those are all off to the side now. But who was that person again on the power-ups? Who did he say?
Yeah, Jane McGonigal. She has some amazing TED Talks. Her book, Super Better, is one of my all-time favorite books. It is so amazing. And again, very practical.
And okay, we're going to post... I'll bring that to one of the... You're going to post that on your
site?
Yeah,
we'll post information about that on our Facebook page and our webpage as well, Maureen. Yeah, and I, you know, our hearts go out to you, all of us. You know, I can't put myself in your shoes, obviously, but I can only imagine what it's been like for you and others in the emergency department and on the front lines for almost 2 years now.
Yeah, we're a tough crew, but there is a breaking point.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for calling and being part of the conversation today. And good luck to you and good luck to your colleagues.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Of course. Of course. And Amy, when you hear Maureen's voice and you hear the, you know, this is real. This is not some, cosmic conversation we're having that people need to have ways of coping, because the time we're living through is very, very real and very, very tough for many people.
Yes. And I think part of the coping right now, because this has been going on for 2 years almost, you know, this pandemic and all of the uncertainty that goes with it, all the fear, all the upset, just not knowing what's going to happen next, the constant change. You know, people often talk about being resilient and bouncing back when things get normal again, going back to the way it was. And part of being resilient is understanding that life is about constant change and uncertainty. It's insecurity. living, being alive, we never know what's going to happen. And resilient people move through life not railing against that and fighting it, but having that awareness and moving through life, knowing, you know what, I'm going to have to adapt. And that's part of life. And not only will I have to adapt, but adapting isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's a good thing because I can learn from that. I can grow stronger. And so I think as we're looking at where we are in the pandemic currently, we really, to be more resilient, have to start approaching it from this standpoint of it's not going to go back to the way it was. We're in the process of immense change, and part of change is transitioning, meaning getting used to whatever is going to happen next. And we don't even know what that is yet. We don't really have a firm horizon to look at, which makes it more anxiety provoking. But my message here is we just need to embrace that more. A lot of stress comes from resisting what's happening, from denying reality. And so to be able to say, yeah, this is a really tough time, and I'm just going to be aware of that and acknowledge it and try to just flow with it and accept that as a part of life, knowing that this is going to strengthen me for whatever lies ahead, even if we don't know what that is.
David, I see you nodding fervently.
Yeah. Man, it's a bunch of great stuff, Amy. So yeah, one of the things in terms of reframing how we look at difficult times is the concept, you know, we hear so much about post-traumatic stress disorder. There's also something called post-traumatic stress growth, how people transform, if they do it mindfully and intentionally, to a much better version of themselves through hard times. There's also a quote from Wordsworth, which has really helped me during hard times, is, "A deep distress hath humanized my soul." A deep distress hath humanized my soul. And how we have a choice when we're knocked down or we're going through really hard times. Do we collapse into ourselves to become small and bitter and resentful, or do we let it soften us and help us have more compassion, like for other people who are going through difficult times? I think on a practical level, also, one of the things that I found really helpful, whether it's for myself or coaching other people, is to look at your life at times when you've gone through really difficult challenges and to remind yourself, like, hey, if I could handle that time, I can handle this. I think a lot of times when we're faced with a challenge, we get so focused in the moment of like, oh my God, this is so big and I don't think I'm strong enough to handle it. We forget the whole expanse of our time in our lives when there've been plenty of times we've showed tremendous strength. And it's like, I got it in me. So reminding ourselves of that is really helpful.
We are talking about resilience. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can post a comment on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, or send us an email, talk@mainpublic.org. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Maine Community Foundation, where donors with a passion for Maine make a difference through their charitable gifts.
On the next Science Friday, Dr. Angela Rasmussen breaks down the latest COVID news, testing, and vax advice, plus the joys of the Audubon Christmas bird count.
It expands my delight in the details of the natural world and things I can learn about.
All on the next Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Friday afternoon at 2 on Maine Public Radio. All Creatures Great and Small returns to Masterpiece on Maine Public Television for an all-new season of heartfelt moments, friendship, and mischief. This Sunday evening at 9, transport yourself back to Yorkshire Dales for more laughs, more love, and of course, more animals. That's the season premiere of All Creatures Great and Small, Sunday evening at 9 on Maine Public Television.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we are talking about what resilience means and how to make it part of your approach to life. With me, David Lee, who's a workplace consultant, career coach, and resilience expert, and Amy Wood, an executive coach, author, and psychologist. Share your comments or questions by email, talk@mainepublic.org. Comment on our Facebook page or on Twitter or our Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. David, I know that you've studied and worked with elite athletes in the past, and I'm wondering what the world of elite athletics can teach the rest of us as we go through not just the pandemic, but also this time in sort of American life of the political divisiveness and everything else that's going on.
Yeah, I think there are two themes that really stand out for me. And one I mentioned is the bigger the challenge, the more important recovery is. So for instance, back to the analogy I use with an ongoing Ironman competition, that to not have your body break down, if you're training for an Ironman, you have to step up your recovery game. And so that's one of the most important things I think of for people right now during the pandemic is, quote, stepping up their recovery game. The other really game-changing concept, in my opinion, that elite athletes know is how important it is to be able to get yourself into a productive emotional, physiological, mental state to perform at your best. And they're like all different components to making that work. And so how that fits in our lives, those of us who aren't, you know, running marathon or competing in marathons, et cetera, is getting good. And this is back in back when I was in the mind body medicine field. So oftentimes, even back then, and even today, people talk about how the mind affects the body, like stress-producing thoughts stress us out. There's not nearly enough emphasis of how to use the body to affect the mind. So like a simple, and this simple example people are familiar with, doing slow, deep breathing. That's perhaps the fastest way to calm our nervous system. And just like a little pro tip, making the exhalation about twice as long as the inhalation is the key. So slow, deep breathing, but also it could be, let's say, like one of the things I'll recommend to people who are doing a Zoom job interview and they're nervous or they haven't talked to anybody that day and they're sort of their energy level is low. I recommend to them, like, take a fast walk, get on the phone and talk with a friend to boost your energy level, take a cold shower, do some push-ups, any and all of the above to boost your energy level. Because you think about it, the 12-step groups say it so well, halt, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. When we're in a negative emotional, physiological, mental state, it's hard to respond patiently, compassionately, with equanimity. But if we're rested, if we have high energy, if our nervous system is calm but alert, we're able to respond in a much more effective way.
Amy, I know when you talk about self-care, you don't just mean like going and getting a manicure. You're talking about bigger things like boundaries.
Yes. Yeah. So I think self-care, you know, you have to, first of all, put yourself at the center if you're going to be resilient. And sometimes when I say that, people say, well, isn't that selfish? But I look at it like if you're not taking care of yourself, mind, body, and spirit and soul, then you're not going to be there for everybody else. You won't be as effective. So it really starts with asking, you know, what do you need to nourish yourself so that you can think clearly, basically, and do what you need to do to get through the day physically. And I would say the most important thing of all, if there's one thing to start with, it's getting enough sleep. Most Americans do not get enough sleep. And we all know the amount of sleep we need. to wake up feeling refreshed. So whatever you can do to get that. And next thing would be making sure that you're eating well, making sure you're drinking plenty of water, making sure you're getting enough movement. You know, David has talked a lot about the benefit of physical activity, and it doesn't have to be, as David said, running marathons, but just getting up on a regular basis and walking around a little bit. That's really essential. So those are the basics of taking care of yourself. But then we also talk about boundaries, you know, setting boundaries with other people, making sure other people aren't taking too much of you, making sure other people aren't draining you too much. We all have to deal with people that are stressful at work, at home, in our community, but it's about designing those relationships as much as you can when you have to see those people so that they're not depleting you. And then there's setting boundaries with ourselves, you know, with our habits, with our cravings, making sure we're not doing too many unhealthy things. And also with technology, that's a huge one. We're all addicted to technology. Most of us can't stay away from our phones and our laptops. And we have to really manage that, because that's another thing that really steals our precious energy. And I think the main way to look at it is, you know, we all have a certain amount of energy. David and I have talked about this. We have a certain amount of energy that we can use. It's like a currency. How do you want to spend it? Do you want to spend it scrolling through Instagram endlessly? Or do you want to spend it taking a walk with a friend? You know, you have those choices to make every day. And I think it's really about being on top of that. The more you're on top of that, how you're setting limits, spending your energy, taking care of yourself, these are the things that we can control. And when we control those things we're in command of, we feel stronger, we feel more resilient, instead of looking at all the things we can't control. And there's so much we can't control. It's not just the pandemic. It's most of life we can't control. We can't control other people. We could go on and on. The more we look at trying to control things we can't control, the more out of control we feel. So when you're thinking about self-care, ask, you know, what can I do to feel stronger? What can I do to feel happier, to feel like I can handle the adversity in life?
And I really like that. Energy is like a currency. How do you want to spend it? That's terrific. We're going to go to Margaret. Margaret's calling from Ellsworth. Hi, Margaret. Go ahead.
Hi. What Amy's just been talking about feeds into what I was thinking about in terms of knowing what your limits are and not trying to be in control so much. And I wish they could speak a little bit to the issues of high self-expectations and pride, which I think are very limiting in terms of good use of our energy.
David, high expectations and pride.
Wow, interesting question. Here's what comes up for me, and it might be a little bit different than what Margaret you're thinking about, so you can change whatever I'm saying. So first off, is there, to me, there's a difference between like ego-based pride, that where we need to like perform at a certain level or have status to feel good about ourselves. There's a difference between, and you talked about high self-expectations, between this interesting conversation related to resilience and I think emotional well-being. And on one hand, my belief is we really need to be compassionate. Like, it doesn't serve us or anybody if we're beating up on ourselves. Let's say, you know, we ate the sleeve of cookies or, you know, whatever it is. It doesn't serve us to be hard, you know, mean to ourselves. We need to be compassionate. The flip side, back to self-expectations, we also, it's kind of like parents who spoil their kids. There's that happy medium of having firm expectations and boundaries and not spoiling them and being compassionate. So it's different for each of us. Like I'll give you a, for instance, where my natural tendency has always been to physical comfort. like have the temperature just the right way. And I've never been an endurance athlete. I'm more like high intensity interval training kind of person. And this past year, I really got into good old Wim Hof, the cold water plunge in the ocean and the breath stuff. And I never in a million years would have thought that I would be able to handle. And I was just in the ocean yesterday, you know, no wetsuit or anything like that. And that challenge versus like, oh, I'm just going to be just easy on myself. That builds resilience and it builds, it helps shift your identity back to like, I can handle things. So that's actually just like a simple, I think from personal experience, really powerful practice for building resilience is doing little like micro challenges. And you get that feeling of the win and like, yes, I did it, which boot like dopamine levels and all kinds of other positive biochemicals in the body and helps to shift our identity from like, I can't handle things to like, yeah, bring it on.
Amy.
Yes. And I think that it takes, as I said before, it takes daily practice to be resilient. And resilience is not an intellectual exercise. It's not about listening to the show today or reading a book on resilience and saying, you know what, I'm just going to start being more resilient. I'm going to have a new attitude. You have to do it all the time. It's about action. And I often use David's example of him taking these daily plunges in the ocean, no matter how cold it is, because, you know, it's more than saying I'm going to be more courageous. He actually does it. And then he feels more courageous. So to be more resilient, it's about taking small steps, like David was saying, just a little bit outside of your comfort zone. And I'll have to admit that jumping in the ocean today is a bit too far out of mine. But, you know, I always try to do something small every day that's a little bit scary. That keeps me exercising my resiliency muscle. And one thing that I'll ask people when they're feeling like they can't get through something is, you know, what are you most proud of in your life? And, you know, I never get an answer like I'm really proud of my beautiful car or how much money I have in my bank account or how attractive I am. It's always, you know, I am so proud of myself because I put myself through graduate school or I raised these three great kids. I built this house by myself. And then I'll ask, and how was that? Was that easy? And they'll say, no, that was really, really hard. And instantly they're reminded of two things. One is, you know what, I can get through tough times. And two, it's a reward for that. And you don't feel proud if you don't take small risks, if you don't do things that are tough. So I think the challenge is really, you don't want to push yourself so far outside your comfort zone that you're creating trauma for yourself and you never want to do it again. You want to just push yourself a little bit so that it feels like an accomplishment, but you're not completely overwhelmed. And again, we keep coming back to this idea of you don't want to do anything that you can't recover from, you know, in a reasonable amount of time. And just one more thing related to that, you know, so many people, they say they're going to recover. Let's say they've been working 80 hours a week for several weeks, and they say, I know all I'm going to do this weekend is sleep and I'm going to feel better. And, or I'm going to go on vacation for 2 weeks after a week of working like crazy. That doesn't work. You have to do the recovery on an ongoing basis. And you also have to do these, you know, the small risk taking on an ongoing basis. So I think David would agree, because I see him nodding, you know, that again, it's a daily practice. And it's something David and I work at every day, even though we're resilience experts, something, you know, we have to do because we're human and we have days when we feel, hey, I'm not going to get through this. We have to find ways of grounding ourselves also. It's something we all experience as people.
Margaret, thank you so much for calling. We're going to move to Buxton and Sam. Hi, Sam. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I was working in healthcare triage by phone, and I kind of had to give it up after the stress finally got to me. And resilience to me means a lot of things. So one of the things I think about is, I mean, I am in a better job now, in a better place, you know, with a salary increase, with the great resignation. But I think a lot of people that are having tough troubles now, it's the mindset of the community is really not set for the pandemic. You know, in Portugal, they had an admiral in charge of their health system, and he wore fatigues, and he's managed pretty well. He's pretty popular. you know, in World War II, we did a lot of things, victory gardens and victory bonds and such. I don't think people are doing enough to help each other. Of course, you have to take care of yourself. You know, when you learn life-saving, the first rule is you can't save anybody if you're going to drown yourself. So you have to take care of yourself. But a large part of what we need today is people helping each other. And you get a lot of self-satisfaction and resilience when you reach out to somebody else and you help them, whether they say thank you or not. But, of course, if they say thank you, that's even better. But when you help other people, it helps you feel better. And I think that's what we need a lot more of. Thank you.
Boy, Sam, well said. And Amy and David are both nodding. And Amy, you know, I think we're talking a lot about personal and individual resiliency, but community resilience is an important part of this conversation.
Yes, it's really important. We have been talking just about what we can do to be individually resilient, but a really big part of resilience, and it's integral to overall resilience for all of us, is connection, relationships, giving back to the community, collaborating with other people. That's huge. You know, one way we can all feel stronger is by working together, because we're all overwhelmed. And so one thing that we're really struggling with in the pandemic right now is a lot of us are feeling isolated because a lot of us are working remotely. We can't have as much contact with people. And that's really destructive because we're social beings and we need that. So the more ways we can find to connect, you know, just by communicating with family and friends, with loved ones, by communicating with our colleagues, finding creative ways to do that if we have to do it online, by helping those in need, by joining forces with other people, figuring out what our own strengths are, and then combining strengths with other people and accomplishing things together, that helps us a lot to feel more resilient in our relationships, on our own, in our community, in our world.
David.
Yeah, oh boy, a bunch of good stuff, both from Sam and Amy. I just want to quickly tag on to what Amy just said about the accomplishing things together. One of the best ways of creating bonds is through facing challenges together. And that's one of the things, along with elite athletes, special forces, like studying what special forces and Navy SEALs do to create such unbelievably resilient individuals is really fascinating to me. And one of the biggest things that makes them so resilient is the emphasis on team and relationship. And they'll talk about, there's no bond in my life, a relationship bond as strong as with my teammates, because they face challenges together. I think so. Not only, you know, having the community to bond together to face challenges, like what projects can we do? And to build on Sam's point, like how can we come together to help those less fortunate than us? Not only does it help people transcend their political and social ideology differences because they've got a common cause. Another really important part about it, I think, is when we give to others, when we help others, it helps shift our identity from feeling like this helpless victim in this big, overwhelming world to like, I'm a helper. I'm a philanthropist. I'm somebody who's helping other people. That's such a more empowering self-identity, which also, back to the mind-body connection, shifts people into a more empowered state. So they're able to see the other situation, you know, challenges they're facing in a much more, to use the word again, empowered, I can do this frame of mind.
We have to take another break. This is Maine Calling. We're talking about resilience, and we'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Evergreen Home Performance, a locally owned energy efficiency company with career opportunities available. Details at evergreenyourhome.com.
I'm Scott Tong. On the anniversary of the January 6th attack, President Biden calls out his predecessor.
And here's the truth. The former president of the United States of America has created and spread a web of lies about the 2020 election.
That's next time on Here and Now.
Join us for Here and Now today at noon. Maine Public News Connect is a new initiative developed to provide the top stories from Maine Public News in translation. Thanks to the tremendous support of the Maine Immigration Rights Coalition, Umjambo Africa, and other community partners, Maine Public News Connect releases new video reports every Friday afternoon by 3 o'clock. Our ongoing pilot program includes news translated into French, Spanish, Portuguese, and Somali. You can find Maine Public News Connect reports online at mainepublic.org and on our social media platforms today at 3 p.m.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You are listening to Maine Calling. And today on the program, we are talking about the role of resilience in our lives and tips for going with the flow. My guests, Amy Wood, who is a psychologist and executive coach, and David Lee, the founder of Human Nature at Work. You can join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Maura, who's calling from Falmouth. Hi, Maura. Go ahead.
Hi. So I have a different take on the pandemic. I mean, I've been strangely productive and happy, more so than I've been in probably the last 10 years. And I think part of it is I'm a single parent of a special needs child. So I was already on kind of a tight schedule, and I had to be even more cognizant of how I spent my, I call it my stress budget. So I used my stimulus funds to buy a new car, to use, put a down payment, and I have a nice new car because I didn't want to deal with getting my old car fixed that had 173,000 miles on it. And I walk every day like 2 miles and drag my daughter with me. She does it, but I don't hang out with people or relatives that I consider are toxic. And I use my time productively because not everyone makes it through the pandemic, and I lost a good friend. So I'm very careful of how I spend my time and energy.
Maura, it sounds to me, and Amy, it sounds to me like Maura has adopted what you would call a resilient mindset. She's used this time for self-care and for sort of doing some shifting.
Yes, absolutely. And she brings to mind, you bring to mind to me, Maura, another really big component of resilience, which, well, actually two. One is finding the gifts in adversity, which I think you've clearly done, you know, not just looking at the problems. You know, optimism is important and it's part of resiliency. But the thing about optimism, it's not just putting on a happy face. It's saying, you know, we have some issues here to resolve, but I'm going to work at solutions. I'm not just going to keep complaining. And it seems like that's what you have done. Another really important part of this is being grateful, you know, looking at what we have, not what we've lost, looking at what we have gained from this experience. You know, there's a lot we can say about the pandemic in terms of how it's disrupting our lives, but look at what's come from it already. Relationships have been formed, have been strengthened through the pandemic. We have new ways of working that are actually better than before, like the hybrid situation that's going on. And there's all sorts of other things. So looking at adversity and saying, well, what good is coming from this? And how can I focus on that? And what growth is taking place here? And, you know, looking at it from a big picture standpoint, like David was talking about earlier, individually, to see, oh, I've been through hardship before. Sometimes I have people do that, you know, just looking at the United States of America from the very beginning to where we are now, and looking at the adversity we've been through as a nation. We've been through some really tough times, and we're in one now in a lot of different ways, but we always come through smarter and stronger. And that's what I'm seeing in you, Maura.
David.
Thank you.
Nodding and smiling.
Yeah, man, so many good points by Maura, and then Amy, your follow-up. So one of the big points that I think, I love what you said, Maura, is for many of us, the pandemic has given the opportunity to simplify. And that's one of the best ways of having a more grounded life, which is a more resilient life. You also did, and this is another theme, and this is something that Amy and I talk a lot about when we get together, is the importance of figuring out what works for you. And so, like, for listeners, ideas that you hear from us or that you read about, watch videos, is experiment and figure out what's your particular recipe that works for you. The other point that Amy, you were mentioning, I just want to emphasize, because it's been one of the most powerful mindset changes for me. And it's the piece around looking for the gifts and opportunities in difficult times. And something that really stopped me in my tracks was I was hearing somebody talk about Napoleon Hill, who interviewed the most accomplished people in the early part of the 20th century, like Thomas Edison, Henry Ford, Alexander Graham Bell, et cetera. And what he found was one of the most interesting common themes among all of them was that they all said how the biggest opportunities in their lives always came disguised as problems. And the speaker that I listened to said the quote, average person, they just get so hyper-focused on the problem, they never look for the opportunity. And so that's one of the things that's been helpful for me over the years. Like, okay, yes, I'm like really upset about this thing that's happened in my life. Okay, duly noted. And there's an opportunity here. What is it? And the more you recognize that, you literally tune this part of your brain, reticular activating system, that picks up information from the world that's relevant to you. So if you tell yourself, I know there's an opportunity here, there are multiple ones, your brain is more likely to see opportunities than if you're just hyper-focused on the crisis and the dilemma.
Maura, thanks for your call. We'll go to Auburn and Kevin. Hi, Kevin, go ahead.
Oh, hi. I was thinking of the people that, I love what the speaker just said just now, so I'm caught by that. Thinking of the people who work in emergency rooms, and anybody who works in an office that's high stress. I once was in a place and they had this great thing, and it sounds frivolous, but it was like a mind hack. They had a miniature garden, and it was nothing complex or special. It was just a bunch of plants, little statuettes, little stuff, and people would go and look at it and rearrange it. And what was fascinating about it is because it was miniature and it wasn't media, you didn't turn it on, you would just walk by it and look at it, and you would project yourself into it, and it would make a 3-minute break feel like a 15-minute break. And that's because it unhooks your brain from the timeline. You're now in some other place. You're in a different place now, and you're not aware of the passage of time for a few minutes like you are when you're working. And you can go up to this thing anytime you're drinking your coffee or you're doing something else and just project yourself into it. Just look at it. And that's why miniatures are so popular. Miniature villages, miniature everything. There's something about that tiny environment that captures your attention.
So, Kevin, are you suggesting that a place like an emergency department or something could use a terrarium or an aquarium or something like that to help the people? Are you talking about our first caller?
It could be anything. And the thing is, insects and living things are fun to watch, but they're hard to take care of. And this is just a bunch of inanimate objects or some plants, and they're low tech. And they could be in a bathroom. They could be where people sit down to eat, or just where people sit down.
I'm going to have David respond. We're getting close to the end of the show. David, go ahead.
Oh, my God. Thank you, Kevin, so much for mentioning that. What it makes me think of is one of the most useful concepts for building resilience is the concept of refuge. And I think in this pandemic world, it's even more important than ever to have Joseph Campbell, the hero's journey, amazing gentleman, when he talked about you need to have a room or a certain time of the day. And then he goes on to say, basically, where you're disconnected from the outside world. So it's whether driving, you know, in your car, whether I love the idea of the miniature, et cetera, where you're just like time outside of time, where not only it's restorative and healing, but also in that quietude, you're able to tap into that still small voice of intuition that can guide you to navigate, you know, this crazy world that we're in. So I love that.
Thank you, Kevin. I'm going to try to squeeze in another call. Go to Abby in Jefferson. Abby, if you can be quick, that'd be great.
Absolutely. So I just have a couple of points. Thank you for taking my call. The first one is processing emotions. When you had the segment on positive thinking, part of it that came across to me was thinking about actually processing those emotions that might not be positive, that they make room for more positivity. And just thinking about it, like for the athletic metaphor, like holding a basketball underwater, that takes so much energy that you're actually expressing energy just to suppress those emotions. And then the other piece that I wanted to add is I delivered my third child during the pandemic. And so sleep, which Amy mentioned, was few and far between to come by. So two of my hacks being a mom with three little ones in the middle of the pandemic, one was incorporating yoga nidra. I have a strong yoga and meditation practice that I could not do with three small little ones during the pandemic. But yoga nidra is something that you can incorporate in a short period of time throughout the day or before falling asleep. And it actually maximizes your rest. The second hack that I use is I purchased a leg wedge and just using a leg wedge, a leg pillow to elevate your legs above your heart when you're kind of decompressing activates the parasympathetic nervous system and allows the triggering of the vagus nerve and really just kind of puts you in that state of rest and digest so that you can process the things that you need to process to be able to recover, even when you have just a short period of time to do it.
Abby, thank you so much for those hacks. Just a few seconds left. Amy, I'm going to turn to you. Just getting yourself in a place where your legs are a little bit higher than your heart.
Yes. And, I just want to finish off today by saying, don't forget about fun. You know, we're talking about building resilience and that can feel like, oh, it's just one more thing I have to worry about. But another huge part of resilience is making sure you have escape in your life. Like David was saying, you know, getting away from the everyday and finding time out of time, but doing that in ways that are fun, escaping into enchantment and fantasy and mystery out of the everyday, being curious and exploring things that are really fascinating to you that you're passionate about. If you don't do that, you're going to get worn out. And a lot of people say, well, I need to be working. I can't do that. But you need to use other parts of your brain. You need to let go of your brain and let it travel to different places in order to come back and do really good work. So the same thing goes for, you know, rigid habits you might have. You know, we've talked a lot about taking care of yourself. Don't be too hard on yourself. You know, let yourself, if you're on a particular diet or exercise regimen, take a day off now and again, or have an ice cream sundae every once in a while if you feel like it. Okay. You know, we got to have some fun here if we're going to be resilient.
I like that last word. And that's Amy Wood, psychologist, author, and executive coach, and our collaborator for this series of programs on resilience. David Lee, also with us here today, workplace consultant, career coach, and founder of Human Nature at Work. This is Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.